top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die, only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies podcast, a celebration of genre cinema.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 457 of the Really Awful Movies podcast. Nobody, when I came across the remake of Roadhouse, I was really hoping that that one would deliver what Nobody actually does, which is a incredibly stupid yet highly entertaining throwback to the action films that I grew up knowing and loving. Roadhouse was sort of a tepid affair, what you could describe as competently made, wherein you wouldn't regret having seen it, but by the same token, you wouldn't recommend it to anyone. Nobody, by contrast, really takes to heart what those of us who really loved action cinema in the 80s and 90s really valued. And that is a lot of incredible action scenes in some fun gallows humor, some great corny villains, some over-the-top set pieces. What more could you really ask for? And in that respect, Nobody delivers in spades. And while in many circles, this one has been likened to the likes of a John Wick, which I'm not particularly keen on. I don't know if that's controversial. I've never made it through the whole thing. I've seen it in bits and pieces and dribs and drabs, but it's not something I would that has really found a resonance with me. If anything, I think Nobody bears a sort of weird inverted resemblance to David Cronenberg's A History of Violence. It's funny. It has some of the same themes where you have this sort of covert, ostensible family man. In the case of A History of Violence, that was Tom Stahl, played by Viggo Mortensen, the incredible Viggo. And in this one, instead of being a family man who's hiding his evil doing, it's the case of a family man and a suburbanite covering up his work with one of the three-letter organizations. In this case, it's the FBI. It's quite unique in the sense that in one instance, I think the character of Hutch, this is played by a Chicagoan Bob Odenkirk, obviously from Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad, he laments having not killed someone because they were dressed in wolf's clothing and they returned to the sheep's pasture, i.e. they started to have a normal life after a life, or dare I say, a history of violence, and they were happy as, I think, a Buddha, he said at one point, and he says, I should have killed that guy when I had the chance. So, you have these sort of twin films, and I'm calling out actually History of Violence only because it's, I think, if Cronenberg hadn't made The Fly, it's probably his finest movie, and just unbelievably good. Again, that one had Stahl feigning a life of a family man in rural Pennsylvania, and then we come to find out that he's pissed off these really terrible mob boss characters in Philly, and you find out what his shady past is. And again, this Nobody features someone who actually is a somebody, who actually has a double life and a twin existence working for the U.S. government. And we're introduced to him through a kind of a scene meant to be a sort of a cover for his pacifism, in a sense, because he gets robbed by two intruders, one of whom is wielding a .38 special, and the other, I think, has a knife. They get robbed, and instead of, you know, subjecting them to the uber violence he does later in the film, the character of Hutch just sort of lets them be, and instead of taking a swing at one of the perps with a golf club, as he had a chance to do, he decides not to, and gets into this altercation with his son. And then finally, I guess, he comes to the realization that he has to get back in the game and get back into what he's good at, which is kicking ass. And he goes out to the streets, a la Charles Bronson in Death Wish, and looking for trouble, in a sense. Then he reintroduces himself to the world that he was primarily known for, much in the same way that Tom Stahl does in A History of Violence. Very, very weird, odd little film with a lot of comedic flourishes amidst all the bloodletting, and Odenkirk proving himself in multiple fashions of being very, very capable when it comes to the fisticuffs. And you wouldn't expect that, again, as the very slight and very loquacious and effortlessly charming barrister on Better Call Saul as Saul Goodman. It's all good man, right? And it's shocking here when you see him sporting a 5 o'clock shadow and this kind of dour character that he adopts and starts going toe-to-toe with lots of, underworld figures. And he does so in quite neat fashion. So there's a scene everyone talks about, and it's this bus scene. Now, before I get to that, I'm going to throw out another Vigo reference, because it just so happens that 2 weeks ago, a cinema in my across the street from me, actually, was doing a screening of Eastern Promises. And, when you can't help but reference some of the, the finer, both David Cronenberg films, but also Russian gangster films. And that one was notable for one fight scene, of course, where Vigo is accosted in a Russian bathhouse, of all places. Now, similarly here, people have called out this rather elaborate and protracted set piece that happens on this downtown bus route after hours. And it is really incredible. And this is how the character of Hutch actually runs afoul of a bunch of Russian gangsters, similarly in this one here. So you have these drunk goofballs, I think what in Russian might be called gopniks, these guys who are just drinking themselves into stupefaction and behaving like complete savages and being just complete dirtbags. And they wreck their car and decide to board this city bus that our man Hutch, Odenkirk's character, is sitting on, and he's occupying the back seat with no fucks to give, it should be said, just staring straight ahead blankly and just unassuming and just expecting anything. And it really is quite amazing, because he, I guess, reassures the bus driver, tells her to get off, takes her phone, I believe, so she can't call the authorities. There's a girl that these goons are menacing in the back of the bus. Basically, Odenkirk's Hutch character takes care of business, TCB, a la Elvis, in a fashion that is really beyond the pale. Just rip-roaring, balls-to-the-wall, A-tier action mayhem. Just unbelievable. In one instance, and I can speak to the gallows humor here, he hooks up one of the gangsters to the bell that you ring to call for your stop on a typical transit bus, and the stop requested sign actually goes off while this guy is asphyxiating. And that is just incredible. And another instance, I think, in a very ironic way to kill someone, but he snips off the seatbelt of the bus driver and proceeds to just give a whooping to some of these guys too, while stabbing some of them with their own weaponry. And just amazing. He takes several blows as well, but he dishes as good as he takes and just wipes the floor with these guys. And it has to be said, spectacular fashion. Now, when word gets back to Yulian, this gangster, that six of his best men have been hospitalized, he does not take kindly to this. And this gangster is kind of one of these peacock types who struts around in sartorial splendor with impeccably, cut blazer. And he's a man all about the good times, who sings karaoke in this Russian bar. And when his manhood is questioned, proceeds to completely destroy one of the bouncers in the club as a face-saving measure. It's incredibly impactful, as is when he beats the tar out of one of his henchmen for the temerity to lose in a battle of 6-1 on the city bus, once he finds out more details about what happens to his goons. And that's pretty cool too, and pretty pretty impactful in this hospital scene where you have this quite comedic scene of a metal chair being rained down. The blows rained down upon this guy who's in this harness, recuperating in hospital with severe injuries bestowed upon him by the likes of Odenkirk's Hutch. Played completely against type, and I think all the better for it in many respects. I mean, this is one that's just all action all the time. Yeah, it sometimes, you know, puts its brain in neutral, as I think most of the best action films from the 90s really did, and some of the epic Schwarzenegger movies from the 80s. They really, if they were smart at all, they dialed it back a little bit and had a few revelatory moments of cleverness, but mainly just went all in lunkheaded fashion. And I think that this is where nobody really becomes promising in many respects. So we're going to segue here into what we learned. Right off the bat, I couldn't help but notice, as we're introduced to the Hutch character through a montage, he goes to work every day. There's a verisimilitude and sameness and tedium to his everyday workaday life. I was thinking about this book by, I think, David Gruder called Bullshit Jobs. He definitely has one of these punch clock, tedious jobs that he just goes to pay the bills. And you see this, the title cards swapping in Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And he keeps, there's a quite funny scene where he keeps missing the garbage man in the morning and he can't get his trash out in time. And he's just basically living in some sort of suburban hellscape. Well, speaking of suburbia, actually, I couldn't help but notice the setting was indescribably and immediately apparent to me, at least, a Canadian suburb. And there's just something about this kind of cul-de-sac neighborhood with the garage stuck out in front, 40-foot wide lot, and you're just, there's your standard cookie cutter homes that maybe the band Rush might have sung about in their song Subdivisions. Like, it's just basically this generic subdivision cul-de-sac. Every home is alike, and it was immediately apparent that this was lensed somewhere in Canada. And sure enough, this is central Canada, and this is Winnipeg, Manitoba. It's a location actually visited, well, metaphorically anyway, that we all visited, and including you listeners, for the Kevin Smith movie Tusk, where one of the characters, played by Justin Long, ventures up to central Canada and meets up with, well, if you haven't seen Tusk, you can check out that podcast on your own and make sure you check out that movie. But it was just, there's a certain indefinable quality of carefully manicured, boring Canadian suburb that was just immediately apparent here. And it was weird, geographically speaking, as well. And another thing I learned is that while you see, I think, Ohio license plates, there's also a Metro card that's used by Odenkirk's character when he swipes onto public transit, which made me think, like, is this supposed to be New York City? Because, like, I don't know if that was a gaffe, but it's pretty iconic, the MTA cards for the New York City transit system. I feel like I'm just doing callbacks to previous podcasts I've done, but you can also check out the taking of Pelham 123, which I recorded fairly recently too. But as a oft frequent visitor to the Big Apple, I couldn't help but notice that he was using a New York City public transit pass. So it was weird. Like, it's sort of disorienting, and you're trying to figure out where he's meant to be. I've read some commentary that it was meant to be possibly Minneapolis or something, but I'm not sure. It doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. I was probably thinking this would have been downtown Brooklyn or something, possibly. But anyway, it's, you know, the perps who perpetrate the home invasion in the first 15-20 minutes of this film, the Hutch character notices a specific bit of tattoo ink on the one criminal's wrist, and he goes through one of the tropes of action films where you visit every tattoo parlor and ask who's done the work, and he flashes his FBI badge and manages to eventually track down the people responsible for the home invasion. It's quite funny too, because when you think about how tattoo shops have completely proliferated in any major city, I mean, I've got, I think, two within 2 to 3 city blocks of where I am in West End, Toronto, just outside the downtown core, basically. But yeah, it's just so funny. Like, you could spend a lifetime visiting tattoo parlors in a major city the size of like Toronto with like 3 million people or whatever. Like, that would be 6 months. It would be an incredible exercise to visit every single one of them. But of course, this comes to fruition, and he goes to one, a pretty funny scene where he goes to one of the divier ones. And it's just a bunch of, like, there's a tent city and a bunch of vagrants and homeless people who are right beside this place, which is, of course, in the basement. So it adds to that kind of urban decay and gritty feel. I really thought that was super cool, too. Another thing I learned was, yes, there is a Black Russian in this movie. And no, not the drink. It's played to comedic effect, where one of the characters is half Russian, half Ethiopian background. And he comes to have this little exchange with the Hutch character after this calamity occurs. And it's quite neat. It's quite funny. It's quite stupid, and it's quite ridiculous. There's something about the way Russian gangsterism is portrayed in a lot of movies that's almost over the top and just comical, with these bad Sergei accents, which is more of a Muscovite kind of thing, actually. And most Russians don't really speak like that, accented English anyway. That's a very, very Muscovite thing. Like, you tell me, an American guy, you, that kind of thing. So, and I thought that was really expertly dealt with in a classic movie, if anything, Eastern Promises, though not nearly as good as A History of Violence. But that one really captured that subculture in a really good way, right down to, speaking of ink, the bodywork that adorned Viggo Mortensen in that. So there was really the keen attention to detail that Cronenberg infused that production with, that this one really doesn't have. This more falls on the side of this, the lunk-headed, almost police procedural type, corny, over-the-top, stereotypical Russian gangsters. And the movie doesn't suffer from that at all. And in fact, as I said, nonstop action. And then we get the reveal. It's quite impactful when Hutch is revealed to be this incredible assassin badass to his family. It's quite amazing, because his son is quite looking at him quite askance when they had this home invasion. It is noticeably disturbed that his dad didn't acquit himself more in a more manly way, shall we say. I mean, is there ever a movie that would have been made for internet tough guys? This one has to be it, because I think when it comes to, I think as you age as a man and you find your physical faculties slowly slipping away, you come to realize that effectively in any sort of altercation in the street, that with a few exceptions, unless you take really great care of yourself, you're basically, how are you going to put this? You're basically a gazelle to the lions out there in their 20s. And it's amazing and very humbling when you have that kind of, when you suffer these kind of physical drawbacks, and you sort of come to take stock in the aging process and realize that you can't hang with young bucks anymore. You know, back in my, when I was like 18, 19, we would play, you know, we would hoop outside for like at least a couple hours. And, you know, when the shirts would come off, play hard defense. And, you know, sometimes it would, you know, shoving matches and about what is and what isn't the foul. But there's, you put me on a court now and I'd be hard pressed to last 5 minutes without just collapsing in a heap. So it's pretty amazing. Like, the internet tough guy, everyone can always second guess themselves whenever they're engaged in some sort of physical altercation. And, you know, we always, I think every man growing up, whether it's, you know, all these questions about what is and isn't masculine, masculinity and toxic masculinity, but I think every man worth his salt has been in one altercation where they've said, geez, I wish I'd hung in there and thrown down, you know, laid out a few haymakers. And there's, and when discretion was the better part of valor, and you just hightailed it. I think everyone's got at least one, if not five of those, somewhere in between in us. And probably for the best, because, you know, fighting is quite awful and it's very, very stressful and really unpleasant in so many respects. And the only way I felt any sort of self-confidence was when I was a regular gym-goer boxer, casual and occasionally sparring in the ring, when I felt like I could handle myself to the point where nothing would particularly faze me out there. I'm not that right now. I am totally the white-tailed deer to the predatory bears out there, or whatever it is. Like I cannot handle it anymore, with all the afflictions that come with aging and bad shoulder and everything else. So it's quite interesting to see a middle-aged character of the age of Bob Odenkirk here. Incredible, actor, of course, in Better Call Saul, and I think very recently too in The Disaster Artist. Tons of different movies he's done, but he's amazing, and he really carries this in so many respects. This is, although it has some good ensemble players too, but there's just some really, really solid bang up fisticuffs, gunplay. There's a little neat little flash where one of the tattoo artists has brass knuckles. There's a lot of just good, solid, mindless, uber violence, really, really bang up stuff. A lot of broken bones, a lot of missing teeth, a lot of kick-ass action. And this delivers, again, circling the square here, in a way that the merely competent, though unspectacular, Roadhouse didn't. So kudos. This was like a palate cleanser from that film, and something that gets you back to the blood and guts warrior and the kind of fisticuffs and haymakers and all the good stuff. There's even a good scene on the transit bus where Hutch wraps this guy's arm right around one of the handrails. It's really badass, just really unbelievably cool and super fun. This one has a kind of moody, dark atmosphere. It's got a little bit of fun. There's the scene where he's lined up a couple of these gangsters on a sofa, and he's sipping scotch and almost having this fireside chat with them before he's going to kill them. And it's while playing this kind of atmospheric jazz. There's so many neat moments in this film, and by no means is this something that can stand along with, say, some of the more iconic 90s Steven Seagal movies or whatnot. I think it acquits itself very, very well. I think it's super cool, dumb, fun. 3.5 out of 5 for me, for sure. I think nobody will give you that shot of adrenaline that a lot of these movies don't have, particularly a lot of ones with a certain sense of sameness. A lot of the Statham movies have a certain rote, beige energy and quality to them. And this is something that was a game changer when it was released in 2021. Had a lot of people talking, with good reason. By no means a classic for the ages, but certainly something that's worth connecting with on some level. And I think there's a little window of flexibility where you could maybe give it a little higher rating. I think possibly, I think a 4 might be generous, but definitely 3.75, 3.5, we're falling into that territory. Good, short, quickly paced, taut, good cast, good violence, good stuff happening with this one. And maybe a bit of a letdown in terms of the title, but it's still kind of quirky and idiosyncratic too, because it kind of draws you in. Like, who is this nobody? He looks like an everyman. He began as an auditor with the FBI, moved his way up, and became, well, someone with almost a license to kill, and someone whose hands are deadly weapons, and unbelievably so. And anyway, we'll talk to you soon. Hope you enjoyed this one, and take care.
If you're a fan of ass-kicking action films,
you and me, we know so different.
Whether it's the absolutely thrilling one-liners.
Hey, here's a quarter. Buy yourself a personality.
You're a funny guy, Sally. That's why I'm going to kill you last.
The interesting gender politics.
Believe that all the crimes have been committed by a lone assailant. There's a high probability that assailant is a woman.
And the even more interesting plot lines.
An army of international terrorists has landed. Only one man stands in their way.
They're always wickedly entertaining. If you love action movies like we do, you'll love our book, Mine's Bigger Than Yours, The 100 Wackiest Action Movies.
Come on, punk!
Oh, I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right?
Buy a copy, and we won't be forced to commandeer a chopper and hunt you down with a bunch of ex-Special Forces ops. Thanks.
Thank you.